Hey there, and welcome to another edition of the In Layman's Terms podcast. I'm Steve Layman, the sports anchor at News Channel 5 and the voice of Belmont Bruins men's basketball. Glad to have you with us today because this is a special episode as we get set to tip off the 2023-2024 college basketball season. We're going to talk with Bruins head coach Casey Alexander. You guys know him, former point guard on Rick Byrd's teams in the NAIA days at Belmont. Assistant coach on the teams as they ushered in the new era in NCAA Division I men's basketball, went on to Stetson and Lipscomb as a head coach before coming back to replace Coach Byrd just a few years ago. And now he enters his fifth season as the head coach of the Bruins. He's had tons of success. I mean, right up there with some of the best and biggest names in college basketball in his first four seasons. Last year was no different, moving into the Missouri Valley Conference. And today we'll talk about that transition, both personally for him throughout his coaching career, but also last year with the team in the Missouri Valley. We'll talk about his relationship with Coach Byrd, what he learned from him, what he took from him, both on and off the court, that has made him the coach he is today. And of course, we'll talk about Ben Shepherd's impact on the program and what this season will look at without having that star player and what he expects his team to be comprised of on the floor this year, from Cade Tyson and Jacoby Gillespie, those fantastic sophomores, to a senior leader like Keyshawn Davidson, to some newcomers you're going to want to have your eye on when they tip off against Georgia State on November the 6th. College basketball season is here, and we're going to have a lot of fun today breaking it all down and talking about the Bruins with none other than head coach Casey Alexander. So we hope you'll subscribe to the podcast for future episodes for the upcoming season. Hope you'll click the like button for this one because we think you'll enjoy it. But sit back, relax, and get ready for some college hoops as we chat today with Casey Alexander. All right, well, I would love to welcome to the program Casey Alexander. We all know him, men's basketball coach at Belmont. Casey, how are we doing?
Hey, great. How are you?
Great. Good to have you here on the program finally after a year of doing this, getting set for a new basketball season. What's the offseason been like, and how ready are you to tip things off in a week?
Typical offseason. You start with a blank slate, and there's a lot of fun for me in that. And you got new cast of characters. You're not really sure where your path is going to lead you, but it involves a lot of hard work, involves a lot of time together, getting to know each other, all the customary things that go along with a new team. I feel good about where we are. It's been a long process.
Tip off to the season, November 6th against Georgia State. When you're sitting here a few days out as a head coach, are you more excited or more anxious of what you might see?
I'm excited. I think the longer you do it, the more you realize you can never really prepare yourself for what you're going to see. You know, you work as hard as you can to be prepared, to have your team prepared, to be ready for any situation. But there's so many things that come up during the course of a game or the course of a season that you just have to be ready and willing to make adjustments. And that's really what coaching is all about, in my opinion.
And I guess look no further than your tip-off game last year against Ohio. A lot of new faces, jump up to a big lead, play maybe the worst five-minute stretch of the season down the stretch, and then you put the ball in the hands of a true freshman, Cade Tyson, with the game on the line for the game-winning shot. And, of course, he buries it to start off college basketball season with a bang. But it's that kind of unpredictability and unknown, I guess, that you have to find out when it tips for real.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and one thing that kind of always amazes me, even though it shouldn't, is just, you know, you find out so much more about your players in game settings than you do in the off season or in practices or even in scrimmages. You know, I mean, it's amazing how things can change when the lights are on and a crowd is involved, and there's a lot of extenuating circumstances out there. Some guys really relish those moments. Some tend to hide. It's interesting to see how it all comes out at that time.
You just mentioned scrimmages. You've had a couple of not so secret scrimmages. That's the old term everybody uses out there in the past couple of weeks. What did you learn in those? There's no fans there. You're not dealing with environment, but just playing somebody else after all the practice time you've had.
Well, it's great for the players just to see where they match, how they match up with other teams. You know, we all have this perception of who we are and where we are, but you don't really know until you face somebody else and your weaknesses are exposed, or maybe you see again, like I said, in game settings, how some players tend to rise to the top of the occasion and so forth. But they're great opportunities. You know, we do very little to prepare for those scrimmages as far as scouting goes and practicing for whoever we happen to be playing that particular year. And so there's a lot of in-game situations that we haven't practiced or that we have to talk about in timeouts or we have to learn and adapt on the fly. And so they really serve a great purpose. A lot of people may not know, you get two contests each year prior to the season starting. Those can be exhibition games against non-Division I opponents where you actually have a crowd and it's a game simulation, or you can scrimmage Division I opponents. We prefer that because of the quality of the team that we're playing. And we seem to just get a lot more done. And it's a little bit more revealing about where we are, in my opinion.
And now they've got the charity games in there as well. A lot of people are doing it for the Maui Invitational this year, and rightfully so. You played two teams that are very different in styles. You got Tennessee State, and then you had Lincoln Memorial, who's a really experienced team, maybe the favorite to win the Division II national title this year. Is that kind of part of the idea, too, is play different styles, play different types of teams, just to give you, I guess, the most diverse looks possible to get set for the season?
It's helpful if it works out that way. You know, but it's an inexact science, honestly. Sometimes you can use those games and maybe the teams that you play mirror somebody you're going to play early in the season, and it'll help you get ready. For the most part, I prefer having somebody who's very different than us. You know, we spend all off season and all preseason guarding ourselves, and we're practicing against other styles and everything, but hard for us to simulate those things, because it's not what we do. And so when you can play somebody that presents different things offensively or defensively, it really accelerates what you're trying to do, as far as preparation goes for the real thing.
So, Casey, I'm sure every coach out there would prefer to have a lineup coming back of all upperclassmen that are talented, that they know, that they've got experience with, and feel like can cut down the nets at the end of the conference or tournament season. But knowing that that's not the reality year in and year out, is there a level of excitement when you have a team that's as new as what you have coming with a lot of new pieces as a coach, of looking at the pieces on the board and trying to figure out how it best fits together?
Yeah, I think there's a different level of anticipation that goes along with that. You're right in a sense that, and I think all of us would definitely prefer to have the known as opposed to the unknowns. But yeah, I mean, it's I think no matter what, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, there's a blank slate. And even when you have everybody returning, you know, inevitably there's probably a different role or two from the guys that are returning. The schedule's different. Your injuries are different. You know, how other teams are playing is different from year to year. So when you think you've got it all figured out because of the experience returning, there's still a lot that goes into a new season. We saw that a couple of years ago when we returned those remarkable fifth-year seniors in Grayson Murphy and Nick Buzinski and Luke Smith and Caleb Hollander and Tate Pearson. You know, it was a different team. We did a lot of things the same from an offensive and defensive perspective, but it was still a different team and a different season. So when you have a lot of newcomers, then those things are, you know, exponentially different.
So speaking of the unknown, last year, first year in the Missouri Valley Conference, everything was unknown from where you're supposed to stay when you go to Cedar Falls, or how you're going to charter to Springfield, Missouri, and what it's like to go into Carver Arena and Bradley. Everything was new last year. Take me back, first of all, to, I guess you're a year on the job and it comes to fruition that Belmont is going to join the Missouri Valley Conference. What was your initial reaction then? And then I guess, how did it sort of play out as you move through the first year?
Yeah, absolute excitement for the decision and the opportunity to be able to go to the Missouri Valley, an incredible league with a lot of history, a basketball-centric league, that's really well supported from a resource standpoint across the league. Fan bases, administrations in the Missouri Valley all have the expectation that their team should win, you know, and that's a pretty unique situation to be in, especially, you know, when you compare it to the leagues that we have been in. Everybody wants to win for sure, but it's not reality that everybody has what they need to win on a consistent basis. And that's what the Missouri Valley gives. So I was extremely excited for Belmont to be making that move. I felt like it was the appropriate time. I felt like we were very well prepared as far as the steps that Belmont's taken over the course of many years to put us in that situation. So absolute win-win. The timing itself, I think, you know, it was very concerning for me. It was probably worst case scenario as far as timing is concerned, because we did lose so much from the previous year. And not only that, we were the move was announced. The move was made and then announced even after we had signed our recruiting class for that season. So, you know, we played last season. Drew Freiberg was the only player that came into our program with the understanding that he was going to be playing in the Missouri Valley Conference. And so, you know, when you combine that with the amount of players that we lost, I've never had more concern as a head coach or uncertainty as a head coach as far as how the season was going to turn out.
And when you walked through the season last year, I guess the thing that really stood out to me is the depth of the league. Yeah, we knew that Drake and Bradley and the teams at the top were going to be really good, an NCAA caliber that could win games in March. But I guess the thing that really surprised me is when you went to the eighth or ninth team in the league on the road, if you didn't bring your A game, you were going to be in an absolute battle in the final 4 minutes of the game to avoid a loss. And that was just something to me that was different than going on the road in the OVC for so many years or the Atlantic Sun before that.
Yeah, 100% accurate. You know, I think that if you just look at last year's Missouri Valley League Conference, I mean, Murray finished eighth. You know, the year before they were a top 20 team in the country and had an unbelievable run. And nobody should ever expect them to do that on an annual basis. But and a lot of it's lost on a lot of people also that the league that we played in last year in the Missouri Valley was the worst it's been in several years. I think there were some teams that were untraditionally down. I mentioned Murray. We were not as good as we've been historically. Northern Iowa was not as good as they've been historically. And so we kind of came in at a good time in one way, but at the same time, you're very correct in saying that the depth of the league and just it's a grind no matter what league you play in, what level you play in, high school, college, pro, or any division within. You know, but it was a new experience for us, to say the least. You know, I think there's a number of teams in the Missouri Valley, all the way down to 8, 9, maybe 10 teams that perhaps would be the favorite in the OVC. So that's a different kind of challenge.
Overall, last season, when you look back on it, considering all the unknown, to finish tied for third, to win 20 games again, to get yourself in a place where you're competing for the postseason right up until the very final play in March. You're pretty satisfied with the progression that last year's team made and the introduction you gave yourself to the Missouri Valley?
I'd probably be criticized if I said I was satisfied, and rightfully so. I mean, I don't think Belmont should ever feel good about finishing third and losing in the quarterfinals of a conference tournament. So I'm not satisfied from that perspective, but I do think we accomplished a lot, and it would be unfair to act like we underachieved from that perspective. You know, to win 21 games we had a lot of really good wins, you know, and probably more than anything, what I felt so good about with last year's team was the way that it progressed throughout the year. I mean, we were a mostly bad team early in the season. I look back on it recently and felt like only two of our first 10 games did we actually play and look like what I think a Belmont team should look like, you know. And so, but then we had a pretty good run for the rest of the way and beat some pretty good teams as well.
You certainly did. Last question really on the Valley, and we'll move on to some other stuff, but part of the deal of moving to the Valley was the idea that this league has historically been a top 10 conference, some years even higher than that, and that if you have a good season, you don't even have to necessarily win the regular season or win the conference tournament title to have a shot at getting into the NCAA tournament. Certainly, historically, that's been true. You mentioned last year the league was down. No one was close to being in that position last year without winning the conference tournament title. Are you confident moving forward in this new landscape with NIL and transfer portal and all that, that the Valley will provide that opportunity as it had in the past?
I wouldn't say I'm confident it will, but I'm confident the access is greater than it's ever been. And so I just think the way that the tournament shakes out these days, it's harder for anybody that's not a Power Six team to get in the league, the Atlantic 10 being another great example. I mean, it's a phenomenal league with a lot of really strong teams. I think they got one team in the tournament last year. So the access is just more difficult than it ever has been. But I think if you have a season like Belmont has had several of throughout the years where you have some really nice non-conference high-profile wins, you don't really stumble along the way with bad losses, that the Valley can propel you into that bubble conversation much quicker and with much more legitimacy than, you know, than some of the other leagues can. You know, Bradley and Drake last year were the best two teams in the league, clearly. And they were both phenomenal teams that could win games in the NCAA tournament. But I'll use them as the example. They didn't take care of their business early in the season, but if they had, I think it would have been almost a guarantee that both of those teams would have made the NCAA tournament. So you don't get in just because you're in the Valley, but if you do your work and you're in the Valley, then in the end, you got a much greater chance.
Yeah, the non-conference portion of the schedule is still so important to set you up for the opportunity to have success in the conference and beyond. Last season, we all had fun watching Ben Shepherd. I turned on the TV the other night, opening night of the NBA season. He's on the court for the Pacers, 26th overall pick in the first round. Describe the evolution of Ben as a player at Belmont to the point that he is a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, well, it's awesome to say the least. You know, we're so proud of him and think he deserves everything that he's getting and truly believe that the best is yet to come for Ben. He's a great story. Unheralded, didn't play on a shoe circuit AAU team, you know, didn't have any stars attached to his name in the recruiting process. But he comes to Belmont for the right reasons because he's a great fit, because he had great talent. And then you just see the incremental growth in his game from year to year. I mean, as a freshman, he played in every game. He was an important piece to the team, but he didn't even play 10 minutes a game. I can remember plenty of times where he was in the game and thinking, man, this guy's going to be really good. And I can remember other times where I felt like I couldn't have him out there, you know, and that's not atypical of a freshman. And even in the OVC tournament that year, which we won with that buzzer beater against Murray State, he was a mixed bag even in that tournament that late in the season. But he goes on to have a really successful sophomore season where he started every game and was a legitimately impactful role player. Especially on the defensive end. You know, I think where things changed for Ben so much in the last 2 years, his junior season, you know, he emerges from that group of five fifth-year seniors, three of which were preseason all-conference players, and Grayson Murphy, Nick Musinski, and Luke Smith. And he emerges from that group to be the leading scorer and an all-conference player. That's kind of the first time it was like, man, this guy, you know, he's got what it takes. And then last year, a completely different role as our best player and a little bit of a marked man, but to put us on his back and do what he did in a really good Missouri Valley Conference, it was phenomenal to watch.
And the best part of rooting for him is he's absolutely a better person than he is a player. And it's so fun to watch him with that smile all the time. I was talking to Ben probably a couple months ago, Casey, and it was interesting. He sort of said that junior season at the end of it is when he maybe realized for the first time that the dream of getting to the NBA was truly there. Like, he could do it somehow, whether it be the undrafted free agent, he might have an opportunity. But he said it wasn't really until the end of last season that he started to realize there may be a possibility to do something more here. Like, maybe get drafted, maybe be a first round type of guy, even going through the process. What was the point that you looked at him and said, this guy could be a first round draft pick?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there was a turning point. But the fact that he just kind of kept one-upping himself all along the way was really impressive. You know, he got attention. You know, I judge it by the way that scouts come through the gym, you know, throughout the season. You know, and we'd have a few guys pop their head in. Yeah, I just wanted to check him out. And then they would start coming a little bit more on purpose to evaluate certain things. And then more and more, there was a steady revolving door of scouts coming to practice, especially by the end of the season. And so, but it wasn't really until we all had a chance to kind of look back on what he had done. I mean, I think all of us felt like he had a Missouri Valley Player of the Year caliber season. I'm not saying that Tucker DeVries didn't earn the award, but Ben definitely had a season that warranted that. But it was really after that when his NBA potential was literally placed in his own hands and he had a chance to go to the combine and work out for teams where, okay, Ben, this is up to you now. And man, he really rose to the occasion. Not surprised whatsoever, though.
Yeah, he certainly did. What was it like, I guess, twofold question here, in terms of having a player like that? It still hasn't been overly common over the years for Belmont to have a first-round draft pick, even though you've got two in the last 5 years. But to have a player like that on your roster, what does it do internally for the other guys on the team and their belief and how they rooted for him? But also then, when it comes to fruition in June, what's it do for the external perception of Belmont that you have now Dylan Windler and Ben Shepherd as first round picks? Ian Clark is an NBA champion up there. And I guess we can include guys like Evan Brads and Adam Barnes and Drew Hanlon and their ties to the NBA as well. Belmont's really got a tie to NBA basketball at this point.
Yeah, let's start with Ben first. I mean, he you know, his consistency was what was so remarkable about his impact on our program. You know, he never missed a practice that I can recall. He never had a bad day. He never had a bad week. He never had a stretch where he was tired or worn out or not motivated. And we take those things for granted. You know, it's one thing to have a guy that can really impact the game, but it's another thing to have it on a daily basis where he's consistently trying to get better and he's making your program better along with it at the same time. And so that's what was so remarkable about Ben. And that's, I think that's why we kept seeing him improve year over year. You know, and then it's also unusual, and Dylan would be another great example of this. It's unusual to have a best player be your best offensive player and your best defensive player. You know, his ability to impact the game on both ends of the floor and to play high level minutes and to be so accomplished was truly remarkable. And that's the reason why I say he carried our team on his back. So the result of that, as we saw in June with the draft, you know, is what we like to say. I mean, it's those two guys, Dylan and Ben, to me, they're linked very closely because they were both 4-year players who had incremental success over the course of their career. And by the time it was over, had, you know, had a satchel full of accomplishments that NBA teams liked and admired. But, you know, what it does for our program now is it says, you know, you can come to Belmont and fulfill every dream that you ever wanted in your basketball world. And, you know, it's not more difficult to be an NBA player at Belmont than it is at North Carolina. It's just as attainable. You have just as much access. And in a lot of ways, we believe you have greater access because if put in the right position, you can showcase yourself to a much higher degree over time. I think that's what scouts like the most about Ben and Dylan is what they did over a long period of time with the opportunities that they had. And so we like to talk in recruiting and when we think about it, and this was the message to Ben a year ago or in the spring of 2022 when we had lost a lot and there was so much uncertainty. It's Ben, just think long-term. You know, I mean, you could go play at a Power Five right now. You could probably make some good NIL money. You know, there's some glitz and glamour that goes with that, but let's think a little bit long-term about what a great season at Belmont could do for you. So on a personal level for me, that's what's so gratifying about Ben's season and where he is right now is his loyalty to Belmont, his commitment to this program, seeing that all work out for him because he believed that Belmont could take him where he wanted to go is really remarkable.
You just talked about Ben's consistency, his loyalty, and his commitment there. All things that I think people would say about you as well, and what's your link to Belmont basketball. As obviously, I think everyone listening to this podcast knows you played for Coach Bird. Then you were assistant for him. Now you're back as the head coach, replacing him a few years ago. When you first came as the player, was coaching always in the back of your mind as a plan? And then beyond that, was Belmont always, I guess, at the forefront of the mind as potentially the plan at some point?
Yes and no. Some people may not know that I went to the University of Tennessee for a semester. I gave up playing. I was kind of tired of it. I knew I wasn't going to be a highly accomplished player that was going to play for a long time after my college career was over. And so I gave it up, but I knew 100% that I wanted to be a basketball coach. And so my decision to come back to Belmont was much more along those lines of, I need to be with a team. I need to be with somebody that I really respect and admire and can learn from, so that when I am finished playing, I'll be in a much better situation to be a coach than I would be as one of 25,000 and being a business student at the University of Tennessee. So that part worked out really well. I think it's foolish for any of us to think we know what the path of coaching is going to look like for us. You know, I had no way of knowing when I came back to Belmont as a player that 4 or 5 years later, they were going to announce the move to Division One, which meant they were going to be adding an assistant coach, which meant that could be me with perfect timing. And that's really how it worked out. I was the right guy at the right place at the right time. And, you know, the rest, as they say, I guess, is history.
What was it initially that interested you about coaching basketball in particular? And is that the same that kind of motivates you today?
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's, coaches have great influence over kids and whatever age those kids might be. And, for me, I'm a local product. I went to Brentwood Academy, and my coaches had such a significant influence on my life in every way. You know, I mean, from life lessons learned, I was really fortunate to play on winning teams. And I think that's critically important to being a good coach, honestly, is that you know how to win. You learn leadership skills, you learn a little higher value of what it takes and so forth. And I experienced that all at Brentwood Academy from football and basketball. I played baseball as well, but my football and basketball coaches were so influential. It's just part of my DNA. I think I've always been a good leader. I was never talented enough to just be a good player without understanding the strategies of the game or the work that goes into being a good player. And so I've kind of carried all that with me into the coaching profession.
You just mentioned the fact that you played three different sports in high school. Do you look at guys with that as recruiting? Do you find that versatility valuable, and also carrying that into coaching, having played and been instructed in three different sports? Do you think that has helped you as an instructor and a coach as well?
It's more and more rare, of course, that you see guys playing multiple sports. You know, I'm not a fan at all of being one dimensional and just focusing on, you know, your one sport year round, even if that's basketball. I would prefer somebody to be a multi-sport athlete, but I do think there's value. Coach Bird and I used to talk about this all the time. And I think there's some reality to it is, you know, a guy who understands how to win and how to play games, whether that's checkers or pool or baseball or basketball or football or, you know, anything, you know, I think there's a lot of value in that. And I think those players are typically pretty good players as long as the talent is there as well.
I think I have established I'm a well-known romanticist of Coach Bird's offensive genius and his baseline out of bounds plays and out of timeout plays and all those sort of things. And I think that's well recognized, but his competitiveness and ability to know how to win, as you just talked about, whether it is checkers or tennis or golf down there at the country club, whatever it is, that is his thing. He is so competitive and so driven to win at whatever it is. I think to me, that's the thing that made him the most successful personally. What things did you glean from Coach Bird? I know you could write a book about it, but from being around him as long as you were.
Well, the first thing I say is I completely agree with you. You know, I still spend a lot of time with Coach, and he just thinks on a different level. Whenever there's competition involved, you know, if we show up on the first tee with a foursome, he's going to be the one to make the game. He's going to be the one to figure out how it should be implemented, who's going to play with who, what the rules are going to be. You know, that's just how his mind operates in his world at all times. And that's what made him so good, especially on the offensive end and the X's and O's that you're talking about. He could see things from a different perspective. And it was his bread and butter. It's really what made him tick as a basketball coach and what gave him the greatest joy, in my opinion. You know, I think the other things that went into that are more a measure of just who he is as a person, the way he was raised, the things that he learned along the way, what he values, how he thinks you should treat people, the integrity with which he lives his life. You know, I think all of that, you know, whether he was a basketball coach or not, and I can definitely say this because he's not a basketball coach anymore. It's just, you know, I've never seen him waver from being that person. And I've spent an unusual amount of hours with him in conversations, on long car rides, in hotel rooms, on bus trips, on golf trips, you name it. But he's never once have I questioned if I was getting the real Rick Bird. It's been the same Rick Bird from 1989 when I first started talking to him until yesterday morning when it was just the last time we had a conversation.
Yeah, it's integrity with a capital I, from the time it was NAIA to the time he won 805 games at Belmont. And it's such a reason I think that the program so closely aligns to the school and the values there. For you, having spent time with him, let's be honest, college basketball isn't always known for its integrity and the way things are done behind the scenes and recruiting and all that. How important is it to you when you went out to be a head coach for the first time at Stetson to keep that as a core principle of who you are and what your program was going to be and how you were going to align yourself?
Well, it is really important, whether you're a basketball coach or not, to know what you believe and what you want. And also what I learned along the way is, you know, the better you can align yourself with others who have those same values, the better you can be. And living that out, certainly you can live it out in any circumstance, but others around you that share those values, can really help you, flourish. And Coach was the best at that. You know, I mean, I heard him say a million times about how important it was for him to represent Belmont, how grateful he was to be at a place like Belmont. And I feel the exact same way. I could say the same thing about my time at Lipscomb. It was 100% a similar scenario where I enjoyed being there and I felt incredibly aligned. And those things are really, really important. And that's what, to me, that's what makes Belmont so unique, and why I love being at Belmont is because I know that there's such synergy from the top down. Greg Jones previously, Dr. Bob Fisher, Scott Corley previously, Mike Strickland, myself previously, Rick Bird, Bart Brooks previously, so-and-so. You know, it's just, it's remarkable, kind of the alignment that we have here and the reason why we all think Belmont is such a great place. You look across the athletic department at Belmont and there are countless people who have been here for 35 years, 25 years, 20 plus years, 15 years. And it's a testament to what kind of place this is. And not so much than that it's easy and you just kind of, you know, hey, it's a great place. You just go and you sit and you do your job and everything's fine. I mean, we've gotten better all along the way with the same people doing the same things.
Mm-hmm. A lot of commitment there from a lot of really good people. You mentioned a couple of things that I want to get back to and hit on. One, you obviously were the head coach at Lipscomb on the other side of the Battle of the Boulevard. Having seen both sides of it is not totally unique. There are other people who have certainly done that. Brian Ayers obviously played. You know, you've got a lot of guys who have ties like that. But when you were the head coach at Lipscomb, was there ever a moment where you kind of were like, you know, I'm a Lipscomb guy now, and this probably ends the Belmont path back and all that?
Yeah, the whole time I was at Lipscomb, I felt like I was a Lipscomb guy. It took a minute for me to put on purple and gold and all that came with that. A lot of people don't know. I mean, I was a, you know, my biggest rival in middle school and high school was Lipscomb. And then I came to Belmont and my biggest rival was Lipscomb. So from seventh grade until 2013, I'm not sure I ever wanted Lipscomb to win any games. And then all of a sudden I'm at a press conference and I'm the head coach and I wanted them to win them all. So it was very unique from that perspective. But I never have ever pulled against Belmont. Belmont was always important to me. I always cared about Coach Bird. I'm an alum, I'm a former player. And so I wanted nothing but the best for Belmont. But in the coaching world, you're pretty focused on where you are and what you're doing. And when I left to go to Stetson in 2011, I never dreamed that I would be living in Nashville again. Certainly didn't have any idea I would ever be a coach at Lipscomb. And even as much as it might've made sense to some people, I never thought I would be the head coach at Belmont. I felt like I left and I was on my own journey, and, only the wins and the losses and the opportunities know what's going to come next.
Okay, so then the next part of that is when you do come back and have the opportunity to be at Belmont, because of all the things you have mentioned here, of your love for the school and commitment and the other people that have been there for so long and their commitment, you want to win wherever you are, obviously, as the head coach. It would be the same if you were at Michigan or North Carolina. But when it's your school and your alma mater, do you feel an extra sense of pressure or responsibility to be in the position you are?
I'd be lying if I said no. I do. I feel more pressure, but self-induced. That's not external. I don't feel that from anybody else. It's just a higher level of wanting to do well, because this place means so much to me and has such a history for me personally and for so many others that I care about. And so I definitely want to win. I want to make sure that we're doing things the way that Belmont expects them to be done. That's more critical to me than it ever has been in my journey.
Back to Coach Bird for a moment. We talk about all the offensive sets he has and out of bounds plays and things like that. You're a lot like him offensively, but you're not exactly like him offensively. What's the biggest things you've learned and taken from him in that regard? And then is there one specific play that you absolutely love? Maybe not that you run all the time or whatever, but you've took for him and you're like, I just love that play.
All right. There's a lot of meat on that bone right there. I don't even know where to start, but I think I've developed my own thoughts and ideas about offense. 100% it started with Belmont. But honestly, when I went to Stetson, I couldn't do what Belmont did with the players that I had at Stetson, and so we dumbed it down to a 20% level, probably right off the bat. And then incrementally over time have put some different pieces back into it. But I think Coach would even say, as an assistant coach, you sit over there on the sideline and you think, everything. And you think you have every button that the head coach ought to push, and I would do this differently and so forth and so on. And so you just kind of develop your own strategy and your own perspective of how you want to run your program. And then when you get the opportunity to do it, you realize that most of that's wrong, but some of it works. And based on your personality and your knowledge that you've gleaned over the course of your time, which for me, the only experience I had as a basketball coach was with Rick Burt. So naturally most of what I do is going to come from him, but I'm a different person with a different personality. And so it's not going to be the exact same. We would not be as good if I was trying to be him every day. We would fall too far short. And so got to be myself, probably what I, from an X's and O's perspective, I wouldn't say a play, but I think a lot like him as far as how to create opportunities. Probably the backdoor opportunities, that's probably the biggest carryover. I don't watch video. He watched video from an offensive perspective, which is very rare in my opinion. And I don't do that. I watch it more from a defensive perspective and how we're going to prepare for the team that we're playing and what they do offensively. But the backdoor stuff is probably what's carried over the most, 3-point shooting backdoor stuff.
Okay. I want to get to this year's roster and this year's team in just a moment, but one thing more about you that people probably have a little idea of this, even from the podcast now, from talking to Coach Bird and others, that you're a big practical joker and prankster. Do you have a favorite prank that you've pulled?
Well, 99 out of 100 pranks that I've pulled have all been just scaring people. I don't know what gives me such great joy out of seeing other people terrified, but anytime I can hide around a corner or, you know, surprise somebody, it's pretty good. As I've started to grow up a little bit, you know, I don't do it quite as often. You know, I try to be really respectful of females and things like that. But I had some good ones with teammates back in the day. My all-time favorite, if you're asking, my all-time favorite was I walked out of my dorm room sometime probably between 2 and 3 a.m. To go use the bathroom down the hall. And I saw one of my teammates going into the bathroom ahead of me. He did not see me. His name is Jeff Bryan. He lived in the room next door to me. So when I saw him go in the restroom, I went in his room immediately, pitch dark. He slept on the top bunk. So I nestled myself into the corner of his top bunk, up against the wall, so that when he came back in the middle of the night from using the restroom, and jumped up on his bed because he was 6'7" and had pretty good athleticism. He jumped up there and I got him really, really good. He fell off that bed so hard and so fast. It was quite an accomplishment on my part, I must say.
That's truly incredible. And that's quite the story to remember all these years later. All right, to this year's team, no good way to segue off of that, by the way. But to this year's team, as a person who's not at practice every day, I kind of look from the outside and I see a lot of similarities to last year. Last year, you had sort of one known superstar in Ben Shepherd and a whole lot of unknown going into this new league. This year, I feel like you've got a few pieces back, certainly two really talented sophomores that I think a lot of people know about in K. Tyson, Jacoby Gillespie, but then a whole lot of unknown again. Compared to a year ago at this time, how much more do you know about your roster than you did last year?
Yeah, I mean, I still think there are too many unknowns, to be honest with you, but I feel I have much more calm, maybe. I don't know if that's the right word or not, going into the season. I do know much more. I have a much greater sense of who we are and who is going to do what. That can change for sure. But as you mentioned, this time last year, I thought Keyshawn Davidson was going to be our point guard, and I knew Ben Shepherd was a really good player, and I thought Drew Freiberg would be a starter and be a significant piece. But that was the only three guys. Even literally this time, you know, a week or two before the season, I didn't know how all the other pieces were going to come together. And so I feel like I know who our top seven are right now. I feel like we can have five good starters out there. I feel like I know what their roles are going to be. You know, so I think we're significantly farther ahead, even though we don't have a ton of Belmont experience coming back.
And last year with that team, you had a go-to guy, obviously, in Ben, and you had one of the best shooters in all of college basketball in Drew Freiberg. They got a lot of attention from opposing defenses. How do you think the offensive philosophy with your personnel this year will stress people?
Yeah, I do think we have a few more weapons. You know, I mean, we won't have anybody that shoots the ball like Drew Freiberg did, and we won't have anybody as good as Ben Shepherd was, you know. So you know, it's not fair to say that we're going to be better offensively, but we can be, you know, because I think we can spread it out a little bit more. I think we can take a little bit more pressure off of ourselves by having a five man that's a little bit more of an offensive threat than we did last year. Evan Bronze developed into an incredible defensive player for us. He really helped us a lot on that end of the floor, but there were a lot of games where we were playing 4-on-5 offensively, which is, you know, very atypical of a Belmont team. And so I think those things can help us moving forward. Keyshawn, Jacoby Gillespie, Kate Tyson, Malik D, I think all four of those guys can really give us some good numbers offensively.
I want to hit on all those guys quickly here. Kate and Jacoby obviously made splashes as freshmen last year, a lot expected of them this year. How have you seen them grow in the offseason?
Yeah, it's been fun. They're both significantly better players than they were. I mean, a lot of that's just the evolution from one year to the next. But, you know, they had such good years last year, but they took that and they used it in the offseason to address weaknesses, to become better at their strengths, to gain more confidence. I think, you know, if you look at it from a leadership perspective, they're still young. But both guys they're so different than they were this time last year, with knowing what it takes to be a good player at Belmont and in this league.
Malik Diaz, a local kid, four-star college recruit, went to Vanderbilt, now transfers to Belmont. He's a beast.
From a talent perspective and an ability to be impactful from that position in a different way, he's definitely a unicorn. You know, it's not fair to Evan Brads, who you could never ask to do more as a five-man than he did, or Adam Mark, who was a two-time Division One leader in field goal percentage back in the early 2000s. I mean, those, or Nick Musinski, who's a four-time all-conference player. You know, it's not fair to any of those guys to say that Malik is better, but it is honest to say that he's different and he can be as impactful in different ways as those guys were.
In most ways, this is a young, relatively inexperienced college roster that you start the year off of. But Keyshawn obviously was your point guard last year. You bring in Jace Willingham, another senior there. How can those two guys who didn't start in the Belmont program but are seniors and experienced guys now really lead this team and help you out?
Well, they have to lead this team and help us out. You know, I think Keyshawn's a different guy as well. You know, he had such a tough year last year with a shoulder injury. You know, some people may not know, I mean, his house burned to the ground in October, and that was a really tough thing for he and his family to work through. You know, he didn't get off to a great start. So he's much more settled in and is a much better leader. He was named our captain, which is a good indication of what his teammates think of him and kind of how he's grown as a player. Jace Willingham is a sixth-year guy, redshirted his first year down at Lee. And then is this year using this COVID year, a player that we recruited out of high school. You know, what we love about Jace is that, you know, he comes from a program with a lot of the same style of play, but more so, you know, the kind of guys they have in their program, the culture within their program is very similar to Belmont. So a lot, like we said with Drew Freiberg last year, he's come into our program and fits in perfectly. And those two guys, we need them to be great leaders. We need them to be productive players and kind of carry the torch. Even though they don't have a lot of Belmont experience, they need to bridge the gap.
Casey, it's my third year on the mic with the program. And so I have an affinity for Isaiah Walker because essentially I came in with Zay a couple years ago and I watched him as a redshirt. I watched him last year move into kind of a small, specific role on this team. I get the feeling from watching some practices and scrimmages in the preseason that role is going to be significantly bigger. Is there a potential there for a breakout season from Zay?
Yeah, I'll be disappointed if we don't see a breakout season, you know, but that can be measured different ways. You know, we had a conversation back in the summer because I agree with you. He's poised and ready for greater impact. But we had a conversation when you think about Keyshawn and Jacoby and Cade and Malik, the four guys we just mentioned, that conversation centered around what a great opportunity he has to pull all those guys together and to be, you know, an elite role player. We referenced Garrett Sturts at Drake, who was, you know, one of the best role players of all time, if you ask me, and what he did there. And Isaiah's not necessarily that kind of player, but he can have a similar kind of impact for this team. And he's really taken that conversation to heart. And I think it's shown up in the way that he's played. I give you, you know, we might get abolished from the NCAA for me telling you this, but in our first scrimmage, he has 12 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, no turnovers, 3 steals, 3 offensive rebounds. You know, absolutely nothing but positive numbers from him in 30 minutes of play. And maybe not fair to expect that every game, but it's what we're looking for from him.
Wow, that's outstanding and certainly something to look forward to. I know you were just up in St. Louis a week or so ago for Missouri Valley Conference Media Day. A lot of expectation there. Your team's picked fourth in the preseason. I think a lot of people have you kind of slotted right where you were last year, basically. What did you kind of glean from other coaches up there? What this league might look like this year? You mentioned last year a little bit down. Do you think it comes back up a little bit this year? And what are your expectations ultimately?
I do think it'll be better. You know, it all remains to be seen. And it's I think it's a little bit foolish to put too much stock into anything at this point in time of the year. Preseason polls never turn out the way that there's they're predicted to on the front end. Everybody has optimism this year. If you're a coach and you're not optimistic about your season or kind of thinking in best term scenarios, then you're probably doing a disservice to your team. So everybody was excited. Everybody, you know, thinks working hard. I'll go back to, gosh, Steve, probably the first time we ever sat with our team this summer. And before I even said anything, we showed about a 3-minute video clip of the Missouri Valley and their coaches' comments about how hard their guys working, and their social media posts about their, with their players in the locker, in the weight room, and all the weight they were pushing around, and their practices that had all the energy that a coach could ever want. And their interviews that talked about how they're coming together in their chemistry and their culture. And as we all know, it's the exact same for everybody. And so the message to the team there is, what makes Belmont different? Why are we different than everybody else that we're watching on this video? And it's not going to be size and skill and everything else. It's going to be all the extras, you know, that come out in the wash over the course of a season.
All right, Casey. Final three questions. I do this to everybody who comes on the podcast. They're not specific to you, but I think they tell us a lot about who you are as a person. And the first one is, because you knew pretty early on that you wanted to be a coach. If you weren't the head coach at Belmont, if you weren't coaching basketball today, what would you be doing?
In a practical sense, I would either be, can I be coaching in high school? Does that count? I would be teaching. I would want to be a teacher or a coach. If I got fired today and they said, you can't coach in college or anymore, I'd say, well, give me a high school job and let me go be a teacher or a coach. But if it was outside of that realm, I'd be in the finance world somewhere. I mean, I like numbers. I like analytics. I like kind of crunching things together. That's kind of how my mind works. If you're talking about a dream job, it would be anything in Major League Baseball, most specifically yours and my Chicago Cubs.
I love it. I knew it was going to come back to the Cubs somewhere there. So I like that answer. The second one is, what inspires you? What is it that when you wake up early and you've got another day to grind, what is it that drives you to be the best that you can be?
Yeah, I'll say first that it's not anything that has to do with personal success. You know, that's not really how I operate or want people to look at me. I mean, I'm not a grinder in a sense that I feel like I maximize each day to its fullest. But I am pretty calculated in how I live and the things that are important to me. I want to focus on the things that in my mind really matter the most. My family, my job, the people around me, the people I interact with each day. I'm a pretty simple person, I think, when it comes to those things. I'm not pretty conservative by nature, and I generally stay between the lines.
And then the last thing, this could be interesting, is you describe yourself as a simple person, but what's kind of the way you unwind or let loose? And you can define it however you want, but end of the season, maybe it's right after you win the Missouri Valley Conference Championship for the first time. Maybe it's in the middle of the summer, whatever. What's your sort of guilty way you unwind, or just the way you let loose from it all? Is it like a great bottle of wine with Sonny? Is it going to the beach? Is it playing around a golf? Like, what is, how do you get away from it all?
All those things. Okay. Literally all those things. I mean, that's the answer to my question. There's no place that I relax more and feel more peace than sitting at the beach doing nothing. I am a guy that can sit at the beach for 10 hours and, you know, get sunburn my head and, you know, and enjoy every minute of it. And that's where I relax the most, for sure. Most of my spare time is spent with Sonny. We enjoy doing the same things. We watch too much TV together. The wine, I do like wine, so I drink most of that myself. She might have some every now and then. So all those things are guilty pleasures for me. But we don't travel exclusively, and I don't spend a lot of money doing fancy things. I like to play golf, but but I spend more time thinking I should give it up than I should invest time in it. That's just the way that that goes. But yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Well, Casey, cheers to all of that, and hopefully some enjoyment throughout the course of this basketball season. I'm fired up to get it going. It's been a real pleasure. I've known you much longer than I've worked with the Belmont basketball program, and appreciate the friendship and working with you for a long time. And it's been an absolute blast in the last few years. So real honor to be a part of the program in some small way. And certainly it was a lot of fun catching up with you today on the podcast. So thanks so much for it all.
You bet, Steve. You are you're more than a small part, and I'm grateful for our friendship as well. This has been great. Thank you.